All right, Tavosai, good morning. Let's begin.
So we're going to pick up today on Daf Lamid Dalid Amud Aleph, 34a. So if you remember again, we left off, let's pick up actually three lines down from the top. So remember again, the Gemara now is discussing the incredible miraculous circumstances surrounding the splitting of the Yarden. Again, when we think about splitting of bodies of water, as I mentioned yesterday, often our focus is on the Yam Suf, right? It's on the Red Sea. But in reality, again, the splitting of the Yarden, the Gemara teaches us, was no less miraculous. So the Gemara says the following: Vayamdu amayim hayordim milamala, three lines down. Kamu neid echad, v'kamu gofan shamayim. So both says the Gemara discusses that the waters of the Yarden split, and literally they began to pile up. Because remember, as you mentioned yesterday, the Yam Suf is a body of water. The Yarden is a flowing river. As such, the interesting dynamic is when you split a flowing river, so the shaila is what happens to the water that continues to flow. So obviously, there's no obvious answer. It's miraculous. But the miraculous obvious answer is the water continues to build up. So Rabbi Yehuda says that the water built up, Gofan Shamayim Shneima Sarmil. The water built up, again, for a height of 12 mil. 12 mil by 12 mil. Where do we get that number from? Keneged Machane Yisrael. Because this corresponds to the size of Machane Yisrael, to the size of the camp of Klal Yisrael. Leave Rabbi Yehuda. So we'll say these words are Rabbi Yehuda. So the water continues to build up again to a height of 12 mil. Amar lo Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon. So Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon said Rabbi Yehuda, but 1 second. Lidvarecha Adam Kal, Omayim Kal. So Rabbi Elazar says the following. He says, Rabbi Yehuda, let me ask you, which flows or goes faster, man or water? Sahave Omer, Mayim Kalim. Now again, the obvious answer is water flows faster than people travel. Imkein Ba'in Mayim V'shotvenosam. So Rabbi Elazar finds the hole in Rabbi Yehuda's logic. Rabbi Yehuda says that the water built up to 12 mil. So it sounds like above 12 mil, what happened to that water? It would come down. Here's the problem. It would take longer for Klal Yisrael to get across than the amount of water accumulation to a height of 12 mil. As such, it sounds like, again, that the water would have come and washed away part of Klal Yisrael. To which the Gemara says, Elam Alamid, Shayumayim Nidgoshin, Nigdoshin, Va'olin, Kipin, Al-Gabi, Kipin, Yoser Mishlosh Meos Mil. So rather, Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon says, it must be that there was no cap. The water continued accumulating and accumulating, literally. Kipin Al-Gabi Kipin means waves above waves. Waves above waves. Literally up more than 300 mil in height. We'll say astounding. Ad Shero Osan Kol Malchi Mizrach Umarov. Until, again, all of the kings in the east and the west saw this incredible tower of water, Shine'emar, because the Pasuk says here, the Gemara quotes the Pasuk from Yoshua, Bahi Kishmoa Kol Malchi Ha'emori Asher Be'iva HaYarden. All of the kings, the Amorite kings, were in the Transjordanian land, Yama, V'chol Malchi HaKinani Asher Alayam Asher Ovisha Shemes MiHaYarden Mipnei B'nei Yisra Ad Avram. So the Pasuk literally says that what? All of the kings, Ari, can you just close that door? All of the kings went ahead, all of the kings of all the surrounding nations were able to go ahead and were able to see the waters of the Yarden that HaKadosh Baruch Hu split before Klal Yisrael. Vayamas livavam, literally their hearts melted. V'lo haya bahem od ruach mipnei b'nei Yisrael. And they had no spirit to be able to fight Klal Yisrael. So what the Gemara is picking up on over here, Shibbo said, when we read this pasuk, normally the way we assume, the way we understand it, is when the Navi says that they saw the splitting of the sea, it doesn't literally mean they saw it. Rather, again, they heard about it. Here the Gemara understands that they literally saw it. Why? Because the water piled up so high, literally 300 mil, that the surrounding kingdoms were actually able to see the waters of the Yarden split and piling on top of each other. And when they saw this incredible miraculous sight, this miraculous feat of divine strength, they realized that they would have absolutely no power against Klal Yisrael, and literally their spirit died within them. So Ba'af Rachav Hazona, even Rachav Hazona, well, so you understand, when we speak about Rachav Hazona, so the Mefarshim in Sefer Yoshua have two different interpretations as to what Zona means. So some understand that she was literally a harlot. Others understand that she was an innkeeper. that she was an innkeeper. How do you call a zona an innkeeper? Because from Lashon of Zan, from Lashon of Muzzle, that ultimately, and others say that it was both, that historically it was often the innkeeper, the female innkeepers, it was a full service organization, right? So the innkeeper would go ahead and provide everything for the guests. And you'll see why this is important in just a moment. Even Rachav the Zona Amra the Shlucha Yoshua, no need to comment amongst yourselves about this, right? So even Rachav the Zona said the Shlucha Yoshua. So Rachav the Zona said to the remember Yoshua also sent miraculum. So she said Ki Shamanu Es Asher Hovish Es Meyamsuf. She says we heard that HaKadosh Baruch Hu went ahead and literally Hovish means captured the waters of the Yamsuf. That's about the splitting of their heads. Yuksev. And when referring ultimately to the waters of the Yarden, she said, we heard about it, and literally our hearts melted within us, and there was no spirit left in man. In other words, what she's saying over here, she's giving first-person account. Just if you want to know what's happening over here, says Rachav, is when we heard about the splitting of the Red Sea, that was amazing by itself. When we heard about the splitting of the Yarden, that mamish was like the nail in the coffin. We realized that after that, there would be no hope. We'd be unable to stand up against you. Odom b'Yarden, while we were still standing in the Jordan River, Amar lehem Yoshua said to Klal Yisrael the following, Du'u ama'atem ovrim es ha'Yarden. Understand that when you cross over the Jordan, you cross into Eretz Yisrael, you are crossing over on the following condition. Amnas shetorishu es yoshve ha'aretz mitmechem. The Shbarach is bringing you into the land on the condition that you are willing to conquer the nations who dwell in the land. Paul says it's an incredible yisod. Yoshua understood that, you know, the nature of Klal Yisrael is we are a peaceful people. Truth is, we're not an aggressive, warring nation. So he understood that the greatest yitzhara that Klal Yisrael would have when we came into Eretz Yisrael was what? What would be the greatest yitzhara? To make peace, sounds funny. The greatest yitzhara would be to make peace with the indigenous nations. And Yoshua has to tell us when we enter in, understand that Yibon Shalom is bringing you in to this land on one condition. The condition is, you must inherit these people. In other words, you'd have to kick them out or kill them out. Sounds very aggressive. Why? Because if you don't do that, you will never, and listen, we know this. We know this to be true. We know this because we're suffering till this day with the results of their non-compliance with the directive of Yoshua. It sounds very aggressive, and it sounds very warmonger-like, but at the end of the day, there are certain people you could live side by side with, and there are certain people, unfortunately, you can't. So Yoshua says, I'm coming into the land, amenas on the condition, shetorishu es yoshar, is that you inherit the inhabitants of the land. Shene emar, vahorashtem es kol yosh veha'aretz mipneichem. Literally, you will inherit. But most likely, Horashtim, by the way, doesn't mean you have to kill everybody out. Horashtim just means you have to inhabit the land in totality. So whatever the indigenous nations are going to or are not going to do, you have to inherit the land. Im atem osim kein mutav, if you do this, good. If not, v'im lav ba'in main v'shotvin osichem. So Yoshua says, if you do this, meaning if you're willing to accept that you're going to inherit the entire land, good. And if not, the waters of the Yarden will come. Bisholtvim osichem. Now, what is osichem? I mean, my osichem. Listen to this. Osi ve'eschem. Yeshua says, if you don't accept the tenets of this bris, of this covenant, the waters will come and not just wash away you, but what? To wash away me as well, Yeshua says. So the Marsha comments on this. The Marsha says that Yeshua was trying to explain to them about the concept of arvos. People say the concept of arvos means of national collective responsibility. It's one of the privileges about being part of the nation of Klal Yisrael, the nation of Israel, and it's one of the most challenging things as well. We have collective responsibilities for what we do. So you have responsibility for what I do, I have responsibility for what you do, which Rabbi says is an incredible yisod. Because what it says is, you see, I myself might not care so much about my actions, about the repercussions of my actions, but if I love you, I have to understand that what I do has an impact on you, and vice versa. Therefore, Rabbi says, again, in deciding how to act and what to do, we must always realize that the impact of our decisions is not only felt by us, but it's felt by the collective as well. See, Yoshua says, just understand, if you accept the details of this bris, then wonderful. If not, failure to comply doesn't just impact you, but it impacts me as well. Odom b'yardei, while they're still standing in the Jordan River, Amar lehem Yoshua. Yoshua said to them, Harimu lochem ish even achas al shichmo lemispar shivtei Yisrael. I'm asking that each of you, that doesn't literally mean each of you, it means 12 of you, each of you lift up one stone corresponding to each tribe of Klal Yisrael. And I will say, I'll take a look at Rashi for just a moment. Harimu lochem. Rashi says, Heim ha'avanim she'kimu tachas matzav ragli ha'kohanim lezikaron lihios simin levanim she'avru avos ha'seyadim. I'll say, we're going to something very interesting. There are two sets of 12 stones. Now, the reason why this is a little bit confusing is Moshe Rabbeinu speaks about these 12 stones also. Moshe Rabbeinu speaks about the second set of stones that we're going to read about in just a moment. The first set of stones is Yoshua commands the people, each of them to lift up a stone, meaning not each of them, but 12 people to lift up 12 stones to establish almost like a monument at the banks of the Yarden. What was the point of this monument? This was a memorial to show future generations that the waters of the Yarden split. So Yoshua commands them, I want you to go ahead, each of you pick up 12 stones, uksiv, lemanti ezos os bekirvachem, there should be a sign within your midst, kiyish alun b'neichem machar leimor, maha avanim ha'ilalachem, your sons will ask you tomorrow, saying, what's the nature of these stones? Simon Abonim, Sha'avru Avos Esayardim. It is a symbol for the children that the forefathers passed through the Jordan. So the first set of 12 stones were set up by the banks of the Yarden and were supposed to serve as a memorial. As a memorial that Klal Yisrael went ahead and crossed over the Yarden. That's the first set of stones. Odom b'yardin, they were still in the Jordan River. Amar lehem Yoshua, su'ula chemizeh mitoch ha'yardin, mimatzav ragli ha'kohanim. And also remember, that monument was placed by the banks of the Jordan. Then Yoshua says, I want you to take another 12 stones from the place where the Kohanim are standing. So it's interesting. The first monument is established by the banks of the Jordan, and then they're to take another 12 stones from the banks of the Jordan, a different set of 12 stones. And what? So the Gemara says, ha'chein sh'temesre avanim, varvartem osam imachem, you are to take them with you across the Jordan. V'nachtem osam b'malon asher talinu b'halayla. And you are to take them, b'malon doesn't mean a hotel in this case. Malon means take them with you to where you're going to be camping that night. What does this mean? Take a look at Rashi. Rashi says, so su'u mizeh mitoch hayardim mimatzav, heim shekimu bahar eval ubanom mizbeach v'kalfum v'kalfum v'gilgal. Well, so remember, these refer to the 12 stones that we started talking about yesterday. This is the second set of 12 stones. What did they do with these stones? Remember, first thing they did is they built these stones into an altar. They offered up karbonos by har grizim and har eval. Then they dismantled that altar. They plastered the stones. And these are the stones upon which the Torah was written in 70 languages. These are the stones to which Moshe Rabbeinu refers. Because Moshe Rabbeinu makes reference to these stones in Chumash Devarim. Right? Moshe Rabbeinu says to go ahead and write the Torah, Be'er Heitev. Rashi says again, 70 languages. These are the stones that were set up upon entry into Eretz Yisrael. So first set of 12 stones were set up as a marker, as a memorial by the banks of the Jordan, that we crossed the Jordan. Second set of 12 stones were multi-purpose stones. First, go ahead and use them as the altar by Hagrisim and Ar-Eval. Then dismantle them, plaster them. You have to plaster them because in order to write on them, you have to have the layer of plaster, and then write the Torah's 70 languages on them. Yachol b'chol malon u'malon. I might have thought that perhaps Klal Yisrael has to take them with them wherever we go. Therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu says, no, you'll take it with you to where you're camping tonight, i.e. by Har Grizim and Har Eval. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Abba Chalafta, v'Rabbi Eliezer ben Masya, v'Chananya ben Chachinoy, amdu al osam avanim. Well, this is actually very interesting. These rabbis examined those stones. So those stones were standing for a long time. The stones upon which, again, the Torah was written in 70 languages. So they inspected those stones, and listen to this. Vishirum kol achas va'achas shkula ka'arboim sa'a. And we'll say they measured that each of those stones weighed 40 sa'a. So we'll say that's huge. Because 40, just understand, 40 sa'a is the minimum measure of a mikvah. So just so you understand the volume of that. Has a significant amount of weight. Ugemir, and also remember, that's each of those stones. That's each of those stones. And remember, again, one man was carrying each of those stones. Ugemiri, this is actually very interesting. Ugemiri, dituuna dimadli inish lakasve, tilsa dituune. This is actually very interesting. We know you can carry more weight if somebody puts something on you than if you have to lift it up yourself. So remember again, so the Gemara says, we understand a person could, I don't know, I have the right way to formulate this. You can lift 1/3 of the weight that you can carry if somebody were to put that on your shoulder. In other words, let me say it differently. You can carry 3 times more weight if somebody loads something on you than if you have to lift it up yourself. So 40 sa'al was the maximum that a person could lift up themselves, which means what? How much can I carry if somebody loads it onto my shoulder? 120 sa'ah. Mikan atam. Now, why is this important? It's amazing. Mikan atam nechashev la'eshkol. From here, by the way, we also could begin to see that what? How large the cluster of grapes were that the Meraglim carried back from Eretz Yisrael. Shenemar. Because listen to this. The Pasuk says, Vayisa'ihu bamot bishnayim. The Pasuk says, when talking about the cluster of grapes, it says that they brought back the cluster of grapes, 2 people holding each pole. So the Gemara says, Mimasho Shenemar bamot. So it says, I don't understand. Once you tell me that they're carrying the cluster in a pole, doesn't that by definition tell me that's what? That it's 2 people. Remember what that means? Again, you can't carry something on a pole with less than 2 people. So why does it have to say again that they carried the cluster on the pole with 2 people? Bishnei motos. It means that what? They carried it with 2 poles. 2 poles. Literally, again, in other words, 4 people. 4 people have to carry the cluster of grapes, 2 people on each pole. Amr Rabbi Yitzchak says, no. Tortani, vitortani di tortani. It wasn't just simply 2 poles, rather it was a tortani and a tortani di tortani, of course. Right? So look at Rashi, what does that mean? Amr Rabbi Yitzchak, tortani vitortani di tortani. Masui, umasui tachas masui. They carried it, and then someone helped support those who were carrying it. Shatachtonin misayin ha'elyonim. The lower ones literally supported the upper ones. Well, I'll explain this just a moment. Ubecho echad hayushne motos. We'll say essentially again that there were 2 sets of 2 poles. In other words, there were 8 people that carried the cluster of grapes. Now, there's a machlokas hamefarshim, exactly how the poles were arranged. According to Rashi, it's a little bit more crisscrossed. According to Rabbeinu Chanan al Tosa, Shantz, the Marshan, others, what it was is it was two poles, but each pole had 2 people at each end. Bottom line, it was 8 people carrying the cluster of grapes. But I'll say the reasoning why I was bringing this down over here is because now that I know that a person can carry 40 sa'ah if they're lifting it themselves, 120 sa'ah if what? If it's loaded on me. The fact that there are 8 people necessary to carry the cluster of grapes tells me that what? How heavy and how incredibly heavy that cluster of grapes must have been. Amr, so the Gemara says, Haketzad Shmona Nasu Eshkol. So we'll say, so what do we see from here? There are 8 people that carry the cluster of grapes. Echad Nasa Rimo, 1 person had to carry a pomegranate. Ve'echad Nasa Te'ina, 1 person carried a fig. Yoshua V'Kalev, now here's what's interesting. If you have 8 people carrying the grapes, 1 people carrying a pomegranate, and 1 people carrying a Te'ina, a fig, that's only 10. But there were 12 Meraglim, to which the Gemara says, Yoshua V'Kalev Lo Nasu Klum. Yoshua and Kalev, they did not carry anything. Why not? So possibility one is because they were important. So because of their importance, it was like beneath them to carry something. Or the Gemara says, or the other possibility says the Gemara is what? Yoshua and Kalev quickly realized that the point of bringing back this truth to Eretz Yisrael was not to show how great Eretz Yisrael was, but rather, unfortunately, was to what? Was to showcase, again, the negativity, something negative about Klal Yisrael, that the fruits are unusually large, and therefore they wanted no part in anything. They wanted no part in anything that could be used to speak about the negativity of the land. So the Gemara goes back to the previous machlokes, Pligi bar Rabbi Ami Rabbi Yitzchak Nafcha. So Rabbi Yitzchak Nafcha argue, Chad Amar, one says, the David Rabbi Yehuda, and I will say again, remember, we had the machlokes Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Elizabeth Rabbi Shimon on the top of this daf. What was the machlokes? Rabbi Yehuda said that the waters of the Yarden piled up to a height of 12 mil, corresponding to the size of the camp. Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon said that no, the waters kept piling up on top of each other until again, according to Elazar Rabbi Shimon, literally it was 300 mil. So says the Gemara, Chavt Amar Rabbi Yehuda, according to Rabbi Yehuda, Kechani Asan Avru, They entered into the Yarden in the same way that they camped. Therefore, I will say, just like the camp was 12 mil by 12 mil, so to the waters piled up 12 mil by 12 mil. The Divrei Rabbi Elazar Shimon Bazeh Achar Zeh Avru. But according to Elazar Shimon, who says that the water piled up to 300 mil, they didn't enter in the way they camped. Rather, how did they enter in? Ultimately, again, one after the other. The Chazamar, the other one said, Beimar ubeimar kechani yasan avru. The other one said, no, according to both opinions, they entered in the way that they camped. However, mar savar adam kal, one held that water flows faster than people. Therefore, when the water goes faster than people, therefore, again, the water had to accumulate to a height of 300 mil. Umar savar mayim kalim, I'm sorry, just the opposite. One says people travel faster than water, and therefore, again, 12 mil pileup was enough. And the other opinion said, no, water flows much faster, therefore, it had to pile up to 300 mil. Fine. Back to the Meraglim. Shlach lecha anoshim. We'll say this is amazing, amazing Gemara. Shlach lecha anoshim. Moshe Rabbeinu. Kadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe Rabbeinu, Shlach lecha anoshim. Literally, send for yourself people. And I will say what Reish Lakish picks up on. He could have just said what? Shlach anoshim. Why does it have to say shlach lecha? You Moshe Rabbeinu, send for yourself. Listen to this. Am Reish Lakish. Shlach lecha midatcha. Ribbono Shel Olam said to Moshe, if you want to send, do it of your own volition. Right? Do it yourself. Does a person choose something negative for themselves? Moshe, listen to this. Moshe Rabbeinu says in Devarim, he realizes now, only after the fact, that when the Ribbono Shel Olam said to Moshe, Shlach Lecha, what God was saying was the following. Ribbono Shel Olam was saying, listen, as far as I'm concerned, you don't have to send Meraglim. Why don't you have to send Meraglim? Because I know the land. The land is perfect. But if you feel you need to send Meraglim, then Gegezontei, but take the Achrayas on your own shoulders. And that's why, again, Moshe Rabbeinu says in Devarim, Vayitav Be'enei Hadavar. When you came to me and asked me for Meraglim, Moshe Rabbeinu says, the truth is, the matter was good in my eyes. Amar Eish Lakish Be'enei Velo Be'enav HaMakom. Moshe Rabbeinu acknowledges, I thought it was a good idea, but what? But the Ribbono Shel Olam did not. The fact that the request for Meraglim ultimately came from Moshe, it came from the Klal. It came from the Klal. But ultimately, again, was signed off by Moshe, and God himself never suggested it, indicates to us that what? That from the Ribbono Shel Olam's perspective, the Meraglim were never necessary. Vayachpiru lanu es haaretz, they will literally spy out for us the land. The Meraglim from the beginning, I will say, we'll develop this theme even more. But the Meraglim from the beginning never had in mind to do good by Eretz Yisrael, right? Their intent from the beginning was only to humiliate and to degrade the land. I will say, you have to understand, the Netziv speaks at this. The Netziv says, he said actually two different ideas. First of all, the Netziv says is that the Meraglim, remember, were the heads of their tribes, right? Were the most prominent people. The Netziv writes that they were nervous that once they entered into Eretz Yisrael, that what? They would lose their standing. And therefore, again, their intent was to sabotage this mission from the beginning, which is quite interesting how people do things all of the time to maintain their own standing, to maintain their own ego. The Baal Shem Tov and the others have different approaches. They say the truth is, this was just a din of being scared of change. Right? At the end of the day, people don't like change. And even if change is beneficial, and even if change is objectively good, people would rather maintain present mediocrity than have to undergo change for some unknown good. In any event, that's why the Gemara says these were not bad people. That's it, but the Gemara says their intent was to sabotage this from the beginning. Their intent from the beginning was to come back with the disastrous report, either, again, to maintain their own standing, maintain their own cover, their own ego, or to go ahead and just avoid change at all costs. So Lonis Kavnu El Labashtal Sha'aretz, Sha'aretz Yisrael, Ksiv HaKha, it says over here, Vayach Peru Lanu Es Ha'aretz, it says over here, that the Great Rabbi said, the Lashon of Vayach Peru literally is like Lashon of Chathira, to dig. They're going to spy out the land of Ksiv Hasam, and here the Gemara quotes in the Pasuk Yishayo, V'chafra halavana u'bosha achama. Literally, the moon will be degraded and the sun will be embarrassed. V'ivash mosam, These are the names of the Meraglim. The Mate Ruvain,
Shamua ben Zachor. So for the tribe of Ruvain, Shamua ben Zachor. So says the Gemara, Amrab Yitzchak, Davar ze Masora Spiadeinu. May have seen, we have a Masora. What's the Masora? Meraglim al Shem Maasehem Nikru. We'll say, this is amazing. Rabbi Yitzchak says, it's almost like, how does it go? The names of the parties have been changed to protect the innocent. Now, this case, they're not innocent, but the Gemara suggests so. So there are two possibilities. Well, that's what the Gemara means. Either possibility one is that the Torah doesn't use their real names. That's possibility one. But rather, again, they're descriptive names. Or possibility two, which is what Rashi and others go with, is that no, these are their real names. But amazingly enough, contained within their names is a description of the negative activity that they're about to engage in. So the Gemara said, "Va'anu lo alsa biyadeinu ela echad." See here, Rabbi Yitzchak saying that the name of the Meraglim is descriptive of the negative activity that they're going to engage in. We don't know all of the names how they're descriptive, but we have one of the names. What's one of the names? Ela echad, Sisur ben Michael. What does this mean? Sisur. Shesaser ma'asav shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Literally, again, he contradicted the words of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What does that mean, Rabbi Yosei? The Baruch Shalom said that the land was good, and Sisur came back and said the land is bad. Michael, what does that mean? Sha'asa atzmo mach. Rabbi Yosei, now this is a euphemism. Literally, he made himself weak. Now, the himself doesn't refer to him, but rather, who does it refer to? The Ribono Shel Olam. That he made the Ribono Shel Olam appear weak by saying what? That the inhabitants of the land are so strong, and the inference from that is that the Ribono Shel Olam cannot conquer them. Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Af Anu Ne'amar. We have another example of this. Nochvi ven Fafzi. What does this mean? Nochvi shehichvi dvarav shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That literally he went ahead and he hid the words of God, which means he twisted the words of the Ribono Shel Olam. In other words, that ultimately again, he came and he delivered a slanted report about the land. Vafsi, what does that mean? Shepiseya amidosav shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He trampled on the attributes of God. In other words, that he made God look weaker than, meaning he made God look weak in the eyes of the cloud, which of course is not true. Vayalu banegev, vayavo Ad Chevron. Supposed to listen to this. So they went up in the Negev, they went up in the south. Vayavo ad Chevron. He came to Chevron. So asks the Gemara, Vayavo omi boile. Well, so you understand the shift over here? It says they, plural, came up in the Negev, the south of Eretz Yisrael, but it only says he, singular, came to Chevron. Why doesn't it say that they went to Chevron? Rabbi says, amazing. So Amarava, Melamed Shapirish Kalev Miatzas Meraglim, Vahalach Vinishtateach Kiriavos. Bozai teaches us they didn't all go to Chevron. They all came up again in the Negev in the south, and it was Kalev who broke apart from the group, and he went to Chevron. Why did he go to Chevron? Vinishtateach Kiriavos, to daven by the graves of his ancestors. Amar Lahem, Rebose, a reference ultimately again to Marasa Machpela. Amar Lahem Avosai, he came and he davened to his forefathers, to Avram and Sarah, to Yitzchak and Rivka, to Yaakov and Leah. My forefathers, Bikshu Alai Rachamim, She'enot Sami Atzas Miraglim. Save me, give me, daven for me, that I should be saved ultimately again from the counsel of, from the terrible advice of the Miraglim. So we'll say it's amazing. He's davening for Siyata Dishmaya, that he should have the strength to stand up against the disastrous report of the Miraglim, which he knows is coming, Yoshua. Now, what about Yoshua? Yoshua is different. Why? Because Kvar Bikesh Moshe Lavrachamim. Remember again, Moshe had been already davening on behalf of Yoshua. Shene Emar, Vayikra Moshe Loshea Binun Yoshua. Ka Yoshiacha Me'atzas Meraglim. But you ask again, why is it that only Kalev went to daven for strength to stand up against the advice of the spies? Yoshua, again, Moshe Rabbeinu already davened for him. Because Moshe Rabbeinu, remember, already called Hoshea Yehoshua. And of course, that yud represents what? Because Baruch Hu should save you from the counsel of the sides. Now, both of you understand, of course, Mepharshim pick up on this. Moshe Rabbeinu could not have literally been davening for Yoshua to be saved from the counsel of the spies. Why not? Because if Moshe Rabbeinu was already so sure that the whole episode of Meraglim was going to end with such disastrous results, then don't send them. So the Netziv, another Netziv actually, and many others point out that Moshe Rabbeinu saw in Yoshua, this is an interesting yesod, he saw in Yoshua incredible strength, but he also saw an incredible weakness. We'll say, what's the weakness? What's the weakness he saw in Yoshua? The desire to make everyone happy. We'll say, it's an incredible yisod. The desire to make everyone happy in life is an Achilles heel. If that's your goal in life, to make people happy, you will never accomplish anything, especially in Jewish leadership, because there's no such thing. No, it's true. There's no people start out with this yisod that the goal of a leader is to make everyone happy. That's not true. The goal of a leader is to get the job done and to advance the agenda of whatever entity he's leading. That doesn't mean to make people happy, because inevitably, when you make decisions in life, there will always be those who may be happy. There will always be those who might not be happy. Those who are happy with you now may not be happy with you later. There was a famous maestro, the Chassam Sofer. The Chassam Sofer once had a big din Torah in Pressburg. Right, that was where he was the Rav. So two major balabatim, and they had a din Torah, and he settled the case between the two of them. So the person who he ruled in favor of, so said to him, Rebbe, you know, tell me, thank you, bless you. Said, thank you so much for helping out. What could I do for you? How could I, you know, you were so, how could I help you? So what the Chassam Sofer said? The Chassam Sofer said, just do me a favor. The next time you get angry at me, throw small stones and not big ones. Right? So the Chassam Sofer understood. He understood. Balabatim, right? Constituent could be very fickle. So he's there. You're happy with me now. You're happy with me now. But it's only a matter of time until I do something that you're not happy with me about. So now you're my friend. That's very nice. So just promise me now that the next time you get angry, you're only going to throw small stones. So it was an incredible yisod. Moshe Rabbeinu was telling Yoshua, you can't be a leader if your job is to make people happy. Your job, and that's why he says, he gives him strength. Ka Yoshiacha. So you're going to see the Meraglim. There are 10 of them. There's 10 of them. There's one of you. Maybe they're right. We should make shalom. Sometimes you can't make shalom. Sometimes the job is to lead and just to be able to throw down the gauntlet and say, this is the way we're going to do it. So he gives him that bracha. So again, I just want to point out, because again, remember, it can't be that Moshe Rabbeinu was specifically giving him a bracha by the Meraglim, because otherwise, again, Moshe then don't send them at all. The point over here is that Yoshua was already proactively armed with the strength and the courage to stand up against even the majority when the majority is wrong. Kalev was not proactively armed with that. Kalev, when he realizes very quickly, early on, that things are going to go south, so what happens? He goes ahead and he davens by Masa Machpelah. V'ahinu d'chsev v'avdi Kalev aikev haiso ruach achar esimo. That Kalev ultimately, again, had a different ruach, had a different spirit with him. Misham. So we'll say, now that we spoke about it, and again, the ruach acheres is a reference to the idea that ultimately he found strength by going to Chevron and ultimately davening by Kever Avos. So now, once the Gemara brought up Chevron, Bisham, Achiman, Sheshai, V'talmai. So we'll say, so these are the people. Achiman, so what's Achiman? Miyuman Sheva'achav, he was the strongest of his brothers. Sheshai, Shemesim Esa'aretz, Kishachosos, he was so strong and so, really not strong, but he was so big that when he walked on the ground, he like created ditches in the ground. Tamai, Shemesim Esa'aretz, Tlam, Tlam. Tamai, again, so big that when he walked, he made furrows wherever he walked. Davar Acher, but say Rashi gets rid of the Davar Acher. Rashi just says, Achiman bana Anas. Achiman built the city of Anat, or Anas. Shishai bana Alash. Tamai bana Talbush. Each of these strong brothers built their own city. Yelidei ha'anak, what does it mean again? Little Bosa, Yelidei ha'anak literally means that they were the offspring of the giants. Shema'anikin chama bekamasan. When they stand up, it looks like they're wearing the sun as a necklace. Right? And they were so tall, it looks like the sun is their necklace. Was another amazing Gemara. The Chevron, Sheva Shalom Nimnasa. Chevron, again, it took 7 years to build it. Now, what the Gemara is picking up on over here is the following. The Pasuk says that Chevron was Sheva Shalom Nimnasa Lifnei Tzoan Mitzrayim. So what the Pasuk sounds like is that Chevron was built 7 years before the city of Tzoan in Egypt. So the Gemara says, here's the problem. My Nimnasa. If you say that literally, it means that it was built 7 years before and so on. Here's the problem. Here's the problem. Is it possible that does a father build a home for his younger son before he builds a home for his older son? Now, listen to this. So remember that Chevron was in Canaan, Tzoan is in Mitzrayim. These are all sons of Ham. When the Torah recounts the sons of Ham, it is Cush, Mitzrayim, Put, and Canaan. Mitzrayim is son number two. Canaan is son number four. So now, again, logically, Rabbi said we would assume that the city of Tzoan, which was in Mitzrayim, would have been built before Hebron, which is in Canaan, because Tzoan is older than Canaan. Yet the pasuk seems to indicate to us what? That Hebron was built 7 years prior to Tzoan. But again, that doesn't make sense, because that would mean then that Ham built the city of Hebron for his younger son before he built the city of Tzoan for his older son. Ella, rather, what does it mean? It doesn't mean chronological order of building. Ella, rather, what it means is Shahaisa Mavuna al Echad Mishiva Mitzoan. Rather, it means that the city of Hebron was seven times more fertile than the city of Tzoan. Now, Bosa, you'll say to yourself, so what? Oh, listen to this. First of all, Rebosai, Hebron was not known as a farming community. Hebron has some of the rockiest soil in all of Eretz Yisrael, which obviously does not really make it suitable for planting. And therefore, again, the Kavri Bashchivi. That's why I will say, again, you ever wonder why is it that Hebron was set aside as a burial place? Because again, remember, you have to understand, land in Eretz Yisrael was always at a premium. As such, again, which area are you going to set aside as burial place? Only land that is not really suitable for agriculture. That's why, again, ultimately, Hebron is the burial place, because, again, it's not, suitable for agriculture. And of all the lands in the world, the most fertile land in the entire globe is Mitzrayim, is Egypt. Kegan Hashem Eretz Mitzrayim. Furthermore, the most fertile part of the most fertile land, the most fertile part of Al Mitzrayim is what? Was Tzoan. Shdichsev. Kiyayu b'Tzoan Sarav. Va'afilu. So listen to this. So now follow this. So the most fertile land on the face of the earth is Mitzrayim. The most fertile part of Mitzrayim is Tzoan. And yet, va'afilu. And Rabbi said, remember, the most unfertile, like part of Eretz Yisrael was what? Was Hebron, because it was rocky, so that therefore it was used for the burial of the dead. Va'afilu haki Hebron mavuna echa mishiva b'tzoan. But I'll say, listen to this. But yet again, Hebron was still seven times more fertile than Tzoan. But I'll say, the greatness of Eretz Yisrael, that even again, the rockiest city, quite literally, right, metaphorically as well as, right, topographically, right, one of the rockiest cities in Eretz Yisrael, ultimately, again, was more fertile than the most fertile land of Mitzrayim. The Hebron Turashim Avi. So is that true? First of all, the Gemara says, is that true that Hebron is all rocky soil? The Hoksi, but the Pasuk says, Vahimi Ketzar Boim Shana. It was after 40 years. Vayomer Avshalom El HaMelech El Chana. But remember again, this is talking over here in Shmuel Beis, where Avshalom is about to launch his rebellion. So he tells his father, I'm going to go out, and literally he was going to cut his hair. Remember, we saw this actually, we'll say, in Nazir. Avshalom was a Nazir Olam. If you're a Nazir Olam, how often can you thin out your hair? Once a year. So once a year, he would thin out his hair, and he'd make like a big seudah. So he told his father, I'm going to have to offer up some karbanos. And what happens? Elchana va'amar, Rav Avi, Itema Rabba Bar Chanan, Shahalach lahavi kvasim mechevron. So again, when Avshalom wanted to go ahead and offer up the nicest karbanos, where did you get the nicest karbanos from? You got sheep from Hebron. Why sheep from Hebron? Because Hebron had, again, the most wonderful grazing land, and therefore, lemaisa, again, the sheep were the fattest from Hebron. V'tanya, elim me Moav, you should get rams from Moav, and kivasim me Hebron, and sheep come from Hebron. Now, boss, now, why is this a shayla? Why is this a shayla? This is a shayla because at the end of the day, we would assume that if the sheep of Hebron are the fattest sheep, that tells me what? That the grazing area in Hebron are the best, which tells me what? That it's not rocky soil. It's not rocky soil. Because again, remember, if at the end of the day, there's grazing, it means again, it's pasture. To which the Imam says, no, I'll tell you why. Mine. We can answer, the answer itself comes from the question. Aidi de Kalisha Ara, of the raya v'shamin kinyana. Look at Rashi just a moment. Say the kalishi ara afra shaltrashim. Since it is rocky soil, dak v'kalo shemuatu umitoch kach lo hayu charshim v'zorim osatvua machal adam. Because the soil was rocky, the soil was never used for planting crops. Therefore, the of the raya Rashi says mitzameches umalas of v'ochel matzon. We'll say because the soil was rocky, therefore what? It was never used for general planting. So what's the only thing that grew in Hebron? Grass. And therefore, again, it was perfectly suited, ultimately, again, for grazing. Because at the end of the day, nothing else but grass grew in Hebron. V'shamin kinyana, Rashi says, Hamakna amikna hatzon, shekain derech hatzon lahashbiach be'eretz yevesho trashim yosrim etzlacha. Well, so this is amazing. Therefore, again, interestingly enough, because the only thing that grew in Hebron was grass, therefore there was plenty of pasture land. And also, again, the grass grew in a hardy fashion because the nutrients of the soil were never depleted by growing anything else. Therefore, yes, the flocks that grew in Hebron were the fattest sheep, but Lamais, again, it was rocky soil. So I'll say quite amazing, so quite beautiful. Again, so Hebron tells you the greatness of Eretz Yisrael. The greatness of Eretz Yisrael ultimately is that, again, even the rocky, better to take, we know this, better to take the rockiest soil of Eretz Yisrael than the most beautiful soil of anywhere else. Amazing idea. Says the Gemara. Let's go back to a little, finish off a little bit. Back to the Meraglim. Vayashuvu mitora aretz. So remember again, the Pasuk says that the Meraglim came back from their scouting out of the land. So the Pasuk says again, Vayelchu Vayavou. What happens? Again, they came, literally they left and they came back. Makish Halicha Lebia. The Torah comes to equate the departure of the Meraglim to the return of the Meraglim. Ma Bia Be'etzara. Rabbi say, just as when they came, ultimately again, just as when they came back, they came back to deliver a disastrous report. Af halicha, ultimately again, af halicha beitzara. So Rabbi say they're walking their journey out. So when they left, it was also Yisrael. Another Rabbi say, what the Gemara is saying over here is that the same way they came back, they delivered a disastrous report. So to what? Really, this was not something that happened in Eretz Yisrael. This was their intent from the beginning to sabotage this mission. Rabbi say, just you understand what the mussar in this is. The mussar in this is that sometimes in life, people enter into something with a particular perspective. They entered in with a colored lens. So if you enter into something with a colored lens, so the result is already predetermined. And sometimes this is why we don't accomplish certain things in life, because we engage almost with a self-sabotaging mindset. If I go in, that something's not going to be good. If I go in, it's like you hear this sometimes with a child. A child says, I'm not good at math. So what's the job of a parent if you hear your child say, I'm not good at math? Right? So your job... Good morning, everyone, right? So your job as anytime you hear your parent, your child say, I'm not good at something. So the less you have to teach your child is, look, if you say you're not good at it, that becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Anytime in life you say you're not good at something, so by definition, of course you're not going to be good at it, because that's the approach you're taking to it. Instead, you say, look, you might have a challenge in something, but the shaila then becomes, how do I overcome this challenge? The tragic part of the Meraglim was that they entered into the mission feeling that they could not accomplish. They entered into the mission already feeling so small, already feeling so inadequate. And when you enter into something feeling small, you enter into something feeling inadequate, of course you're setting yourself up for failure. So we'll stop over here for today. We'll pick up with the Meraglim tomorrow. A special welcome to the newest member of the Daf, to Ari Lichtman, who's joining us now. Baruch Hashem, today is his first day. We'll say, make sure to make him feel welcome, and also to make sure he comes back tomorrow. You know, give him text messages, phone calls, emails of Chizuk, A. Lichtman at NelsonPrecast.com. Go ahead, really reach out to him, make him feel welcome. So have a wonderful day.